Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, what a week to reload. Woo!
Yes.
312-981-7200 if you want to get in on the conversation. We are reloading this week's news. We got the biggest stories, overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story suck you down the rabbit hole, and which story will we remember in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now? Amara Enya in studio, a public policy consultant and a regular here on the download. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And also Mario Smith. Mario, of course, a longtime poet in town and the host of News from the Service Entrance, which you can hear Thursdays at 2 o'clock on Lumpin' Radio. Mario, good to see you, bud.
Man, it's good to be seen. Can you dig it?
I know that you have documented many times your fear of bridges.
Didn't
on the
do
show.
It tonight either.
How did you get to the studio?
I got a cab.
There you go.
From
not
Randolph.
Walk across the bridge.
No, it was too windy. If it wouldn't have been so windy, I might have tried it tonight. Because this afternoon, I'm like,
nice.
Yeah, it's great outside. And then it's winter again. So, nah.
Maybe we'll do a download-sponsored video for your first walk across the bridge.
Yeah, it'll have to be all sponsored. Right. I'm going to have to get some cash.
Amara, let's start with you. Yes. I think we all know what the biggest story of the week was, probably biggest story of the month, but why don't we get right into the healthcare vote or non-vote today? What do you think?
Well, I definitely thought that was the biggest story of the week, of the month, of the presidency, of the first 64 days of this president's term. I it was kind of predictable. I thought it was interesting how after yesterday when they pulled the vote and then the president resorted to basically threats to try to get the support on the Republican side that he needed to pass what was supposed to replace Obamacare. But the interesting thing is that this was all on the Republicans. The Democrats really didn't have anything to do with this, but it was the Republicans that came out in full force and did
not accept
it. Do
you find it interesting that they became the scapegoat in a way? Donald Trump tonight talking to the New York Times and to Twitter and other places and to the press saying, Democrats didn't vote for it. I mean, really kind of putting it on the Democrats?
Yeah, no, I wasn't surprised at all. In fact, there was an article that just came out in The Atlantic with President Trump basically absolving himself of any responsibility or accountability for the failing of this bill and trying to throw it to Democrats. He said basically it's everyone else's fault except his. And I thought that was amusing, but this is par for the course for this president.
Right.
So it didn't surprise me that he attempted to use the Democrats and say it's their fault, but this was completely with the Republicans.
Mario, you have this as well as the biggest story of the week.
Oh yes, I do.
You got a big smile on your face.
I'm very happy.
What makes you happy about this?
Well, I don't want to spike the football quite yet because he's still the president. But what makes me happy more than anything is that he went on a 2.5-year tirade with the first topic of conversation being on day one, we're gonna get rid of Obamacare, it's gonna go away, we're gonna get rid of it. And he kept emphasizing, that's a terrible Trump impression.
I'm sure
I could do better if I was, but anyway, this was the foundation of his campaign was getting rid of Obamacare. It's terrible. It's not terrific. It's not bigly. It's bad. It's a bad hombre. All of that stuff. And then for him today to be like, oh, well, hey, it's cool. I didn't really care.
Well, he said it as well in the press conference about, he thinks it would be politically savvy in a maneuver to let Obamacare fail.
It's not going to fail, though. I think the problems that Obamacare contains, and there are several, having had to use some of that coverage recently and find out that I wasn't as covered as I thought, they could have solved this problem just by reaching out to a couple of Democrats and saying, look.
But even the president, as he was leaving office, he offered to assist with making the necessary modifications to the Affordable Care Act. President Obama. And that was rejected by this president. So there are tweaks that could have been made.
And Speaker Ryan saying today as well that this is this is so flawed we can't even look at this.
But President Obama went as far as to tell Donald Trump the day they met, there's some things with Obamacare that aren't correct. You should try to get them fixed and move on. And he's like, I won't. I'm not listening to you.
I think it was really interesting in this process and a process that almost became the rabbit hole story for me getting into trying to understand what the Affordable Care Act was, find out what the American Health Care Act is.
Or as we call it, AHA.
but it's interesting. I mean, the argument really all boils down to there are some in Congress on the conservative side that do not believe that the government should be in any business when it comes to universal health care. And that's sort of stopped the idea that this didn't go far enough to give the power back to insurance companies to say this is private market, we shouldn't be in this game. Everyone, survival of the fittest.
Right. I think just from an economic standpoint, and just in terms of how the modifications or this new Trump care, as I'll call it, even though Trump is avoiding attaching his name to it. But it really, this was about understanding how do we feel about profits, especially for insurance companies, about market-based healthcare? And quite frankly, I actually thought that this sent a strong signal about maybe the fact that we should have pushed for single-payer option from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's an opening, especially on the left, that we could actually leverage now the failing.
Do you feel that there is any leverage on the left for Democrats or others to step up and say, hey, we've got a way to fix Obamacare. Here's our plan. At this juncture to the American people?
Absolutely. I think that because we all knew that there were issues with Obamacare as it existed, this is an opportunity now to make those improvements that President Trump should have been open to when President Obama was leaving office. Now they can make some of those adjustments to make it something that we can be even more satisfied with, because a lot of people, even on the Democratic side, weren't really satisfied.
All right, Mario,
with it.
Big political question.
Yes, sir.
Does this, as President Trump predicted and others are dancing around in the media and on the left, does this predict discontent in a voter who voted for Donald Trump, who voted for Republicans, who may be thinking about the next House race in 2018?
Well, I think that depends on which particular faction of voter you're talking about. If you're talking about somebody that absolutely believes every word he says, it probably doesn't do anything, because he's already taken he won't take blame for it. So he's taken all the light for those folks off of him and put it on Ryan, the Democrats.
But some of those House Republicans who stood in the way of Donald Trump, they might become Trump may say to them come election time in 2018, you know, you don't have my support.
Oh, he won't support.
He's already threatened, though, that those who did not get behind the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, he's already threatened them.
Do you think that's real? Do you think that's something that will play out in 2018?
Yeah, it's real, because he's petty. Of course it's real. All of it is real. It's as real as Breitbart, right after this happened, went right on their website saying that Ryan should be removed.
But I suspect that a lot of Republicans probably aren't quite as concerned, especially as they see how things turn out. It might not be a bad thing as we head into the midterms for them to not have President Trump's support.
But, you know, I always wondered, even when he was running, how he would be able to govern with even though he has the majority of everything in the executive and the legislative branch, there's still a ton of Republicans in the House and in the Senate that don't like him.
Well, I think you're learning, and I think we all are learning along with him, that, you know, it's not going to be as easy as one party rule, especially when you talk about the entrenched interests Washington.
See,
D.C.
Justin, it's real easy when you can do a 22-minute show and take commercial breaks and have your superstars tell you what they did for charity when you send them out in the field to get Cambodian milk.
Mario Smith, Amar Anya, in studio tonight. We're breaking down the week that was. Reloading the news, 312-981-7200 if you want to get into the action. We'll come back. We'll do overreported and underreported. Lots to talk about tonight on The Download. Stay with us. It's a Download here at 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. We just did the biggest story, of course, which was the healthcare debacle today, the pulling of the vote. Let's go to overreported and underreported. We'll probably just get to overreported. We'll do underreported after the news. But overreported, let's start. I mean, I it's so amazing to me. And every time we do this segment, I'm like, that happened this week? But yes, the House Intelligence Committee hearings that were broadcast live.
It was great.
we got a steady dose of intelligence briefings and whether or not an espionage and Russian connections at the beginning of this week. And Amara, you have that for overreported.
I definitely had that for overreported. So it was funny, last Sunday I was doing another political analysis show, and we were talking about who was going to watch the House the Comey hearings versus who is going to watch the Supreme Court confirmation
hearing
for
time,
Gorsuch.
Right.
Exactly. And I was the only one that was going to watch the Gorsuch Supreme Court hearing. Everyone else was watching Comey, not because they were really interested in anything that he had to say, but because they were hoping for something explosive and something to be revealed that had never been revealed throughout the course of the campaign and up until now. So I thought the story was overreported. I don't know that we really learned anything new about the relationships with Russia or who knew what in our and
the takeaway being, the only takeaway that was from that was that the FBI is looking into it, and you're like, well,
right.
I thought that was already happening.
Exactly.
And secondly, not that big of a bombshell that they would. It'd be a bombshell if they weren't
right at this point.
What do you think? I mean, you had that as well, the Nunez, you were talking more about the, and then the subsequent running to the president with the information and whether or not that was
you said daddy wrong. He ran to his daddy.
But yeah, but I mean, that was a strange. It was a strange moment. Much ado about nothing, but a strange moment.
I think we learned exactly where, because even President Trump. Oh God, that hurts. Even President Trump said today about loyalty. I think we learned where the loyalties lie. Even when they, if you go back, and I will get back to it. Even when you go back to the whole Muslim ban thing, when they were in the circuit court.
Yeah.
And it was partisan questions, you know, and even with this hearing with Comey, there were questions more about, well, who said
who
the leaks?
This,
and then
this,
it was like, well, you know, whatever for the leaks. I think, first of all, I think that Representative Nunez needs to recuse himself, step away from that, because now he's kind of soiled it anyway. And I think the mere fact, I've never, ever heard of that happening before, where he immediately was like, wait a minute, incidental phone calls, I've got to go tell the president. And it's like a Marvel comic.
Yeah.
He runs to the White House full speed. He's like, Mr. President, oh God, I'm out of breath.
Papers flailing everywhere.
Right. I found two phone calls that happened after the time you said you were wiretapped. This is really a joke at this point. Yeah. And I watched every second of it. When they took a break, I took a break. I watched it all. Because when I was a little kid, I watched the Watergate. I watched the Watergate hearings, and I was so compelled to just stay locked in that. And the same thing with this. This is an important, first of all, we're talking about treason. I think so.
I try to be as subjective as possible.
Oh, I don't.
I wonder. I know. I'm just saying. I wonder if this is an overblown kind of thing, because yes, I can. I'm starting to be able to, through the media, piece together that there are probably some people in the Trump campaign, not Trump.
Yeah, I don't think Trump's in any of that.
Were doing things that they probably shouldn't have, and consequently were fired for it or whatever. At a certain point, I mean, I think the outcome's going to be a slap on the wrist. I'm not sure that you're at the level of the T word, treason.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much that was revealed through the hearings that we didn't already know, and so much about it is speculation. I think what's happening here is just the allure of the Russian spy narrative, and I think that's what's driving a lot of the interest around this story. And the reason why this story continues to live, even after we're not really getting that much new information. So I thought it was very overreported. Yeah. The hearing, I did listen into some of the Comey hearing, and you know, he was very,
you guys both listened to the hearing, huh?
Absolutely.
I did. I took a break from the Gorsuch hearings, yes.
Every
second.
Let's get more controversial.
The last thing I was going to say was, I don't disagree that it was overreported, but in my experience in life, where there is smoke, there is always a fire. There's never just smoke. And I can wait. I'm patient.
Let's move to the more controversial overreported. Amara has on her list Chance the Rapper at Lollapalooza.
You about to get
you said that's overreported.
I know.
What's your take on this?
Well, I mean, I was ecstatic that he was at Lollapalooza. In fact, I know many people who attempted to get tickets and did not get tickets. That day was sold out within minutes. But I just thought it was all over the place, and you know, I guess I was pretty ambivalent about it.
I don't agree with you. Although I do.
What's your take, Mario? I mean, there is something to be said about. I mean, my take. I'll say as a Chance fan, and I, you know, saw him at Pitchfork, like, yeah. like just really follow his career. It does. I mean, it's amazing to see his name to be the first mm-hmm. name on the Lollapalooza yeah. poster. That means headliner. Yeah. That's usually where you're putting, oh, the Guns N' Roses.
Right.
Metallica reunion, you know, Chance the Rapper. I mean, that Outkast. Like, yeah. he's yeah. at that level. As a fan, I'm really happy for him, but I'm also like, I feel like we skipped a couple spots.
Yeah, and I wonder if it isn't just riding the wave, because he has been out front. I mean, this has been a groundbreaking year
Grammys.
For him.
Won the Grammys? I mean, it's amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. He's been winning awards. Plus, there's that hometown pride, right? And he's really doing something that not a lot of artists are able to do, which is to continue to be independent, but also to reach this level of success. So I feel like some of this might be just riding the wave from a fantastic year for him.
I am 1,000,000% biased when it comes to Chancellor Bennett, man. First of all, I believe, and the experience that I've had with his mentor, Mike Hawkins, brother Mike, I've had a chance to kind of watch him be a kid. That whole 10-day EP he dropped when he mm-hmm. got yeah. Suspended or detention or whatever it was, and to this man that's a father, to this dude that basically went to the governor and was like, do your job. I think he speaks for a lot of everyman people that want to say things like that to people in power. I think when he... I kind of saw the Lollapalooza thing happening, though, because he didn't announce Chicago on his tour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, if he's not playing Lollapalooza, he's going to probably play Pitchfork. And it's Lolla. And it's at home. And it's a bus ride away from his house.
Absolutely.
And it was overreported because, again, you're talking about, you know, there's only like two things happening on Earth. It's either something in music or Donald Trump. So I love the fact that that a really good dude is getting a chance to get his moment. These moments are fleeting, so you know
it's a major moment.
Yeah. And not to mention, you know, I think he does something to the population here in this city, particularly for older folks. It's like, look at that boy there, look at him. You know, he's rather inspiring.
Yeah, no, there's rather a sense inspiring. Of pride about. I mean, here's a young guy. I mean, he's very young, but he is stepping out. He's taking initiative. He's mm-hmm. and he's doing it on his own terms as well.
And I mean, in this city, you've got people like Common with the Common Foundation. Kanye still does his thing with Donda's House. Shay, Rhymefest. You know, there are people who do stuff, but I don't think any of us has seen anybody do it with the whole kind of drive that Chance does it.
Well, I will say, though, I think, again, part of it might be just the moment that we're in. And him, this is a spark, right? So he's been able to capitalize on this moment, because there are artists, just like you mentioned, who are doing phenomenal work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're artists, athletes, other people who are public figures, who are doing amazing work in our communities and amazing work around the city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this isn't their moment. This is Chance's moment.
And I think
he's capitalizing on his moment.
Mario Smith in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We'll come back. We'll do tonight's news with Rob,
and then we'll come back. Okay?
I know and then we'll come back and do underreported winners and losers coming up after the 9 o'clock news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, reloading this week's news, Amara Enya, public policy consultant and regular here on the download. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And, of course, Mario Smith, poet and radio host of News from the Service Entrance, which you can hear Thursdays at 2 o'clock on Lumpin' Radio.
Lumpin' Radio. Great place. I'm having fun, man.
Great. Good.
I'm having a ball.
Good.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's open up, before we go to our underreported stories, let's clean up some of the comments and texts from the biggest story, which was about healthcare. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin. Jim, what do you think? How you doing, man? What do you think of what happened today?
Well, I think, first of all, the Affordable Care Act is anything but affordable. Okay. I happen to be a dentist, and I've had a lot of people that lost their jobs because of Obamacare, because the work week got redefined, you know, down to under 30 hours unless you wanted to go into Obamacare. Half of my employees have seen their deductibles go through the roof or the premiums, so they are without insurance now. And, you know,
But that's not Obamacare didn't do that. Businesses did that because they wanted to avoid paying for it. Let's be honest. Yeah. Obamacare was designed a certain way, and now they did it where they – I understand what you're saying, but let's make it clear. That was not a mandate from the health insurance that was offered by the government. It was a way that private businesses got around having to give their employees ACA. Go ahead.
Well, guess what? When you can't afford it, that's what happens.
Okay.
So the thing is, you know, if they want to be serious about, you know, fixing health care, what they should do, first of all, the price of health care, a lot of it is artificially high because of lawsuits.
Right.
And in Texas, about 12 years ago, they put a cap on non-economic damages, tort reform. And so what that allows doctors to do is stay in business and not get malpractice.
Right.
You know, sued or costed out of business.
That's not a good. That's a strong point. OBGYNs
left Illinois because they can't afford the malpractice premium.
Right.
And in Texas, they fixed that. So guess what? A lot of doctors move to Texas, and guess what? The marketplace takes over. People can shop around and find a better price for things like that, unless it's an emergency. And this is part of what needs to be done on a national basis. And that's actually something Trump wants to do in the so-called Phase 3.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for that. I appreciate that. Jim makes a good point, only in the sense that it seems like there's a lot of economic factors working around the idea of accepting universal health care. And that is something, whether it's the insurance companies not wanting to, they want to make more money. And Kitty Kurth was on talking about that last week, and Touche, the idea they don't make enough money. That's why they're bounding out of these projects. Mm-hmm. Or if it's someone who's a small business who can't afford the ACA mandated coverage, so they change the way that people work.
I have a question real quick, and you guys probably know more about this than I do, but a lot of people I'm sure are wondering, how is it that Canada, much of Europe, Cuba, and all these other places have more than affordable health care, and in fact it's part of the mandate? Why? I mean, I know it's big pharma and things like that, but wouldn't it be, if Obamacare is so awful and horrible, wouldn't it be in everybody's interest? I'm a dummy. But wouldn't it be in everybody's interest to assure that everybody that lives here had adequate health care?
Well, I mean,
and be able
you just
to be
heard what Jim said. I mean, the one thing which is, I think, is I've heard from doctors, and I try to be objective in it, is that a lot of times because of the way that the insurance was kind of, it became very difficult to do your practice. Mm-hmm. So as he just mentioned, doctors are leaving Illinois to go to other states in which it was more lenient, meaning tort reform is an issue that, you know, if you are wronged by your doctor, you can sue the doctor. If the doctor loses, it could mean their practice.
Right.
And they
pay
the premium on the insurance of that.
Right.
And that's a lot of money. So they're like, I wish I was in a situation where I couldn't get sued. There's probably a lot of businesses that wish that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the caller is actually very right, very correct. Tort reform has been a long-standing issue, particularly for people going into the medical field, because it is high risk, right? And so you do have doctors, for example, in Illinois leaving to neighboring states that don't have the same structure set up, because it does become something you have to consider if you're going into the medical field, and it does drive up costs. It's the reason why, even with hospitals, when they talk about how they prescribe and the kinds of tests that are done to avoid lawsuits, right? So this is a major issue. I think it's a little bit separate from your question, Mario, as it relates to why other countries like Canada, European countries, are able to offer more universal health care and we're not able to do it here in the United States. I think it's partly a cultural thing. Mm. So in those countries, they've actually accepted the notion that it is in everyone's interest to have access to health care, but they're also paying a significantly higher tax rate, right? So if you live in the UK,
you're definitely paying for it in income tax or property tax, or you're paying for it in a different way. We, as in America, have chosen that's not one of the priority things. I mean, that schools are one of our priorities. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't think that in the state of Illinois, but that's in the there's a couple other things that, you know, that we have decided that our tax money goes to and is prioritized to. Healthcare was never
healthcare
one of them.
Is not. And the Republicans, quite frankly, don't believe that it's the government, or many don't believe that it's the government's role to be the one to offer health care.
Not to mention the GOP has been steadfast in trying to derail any kind of health care since the Nixon administration. And that's all documented stuff.
I mean, there's at least they're consistent.
You did.
I will say that in a way that they say that the ideology of the party, or of someone who is more fiscally conservative, is this is a capitalist society.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Survival of the fittest, and the people, the market wins. And some things we cannot regulate by the government. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, because you see that with what the problems that causes in sort of basic basic needs and schooling and other things, infrastructure and even healthcare that, you know, sometimes we need the government to regulate it so it doesn't just run away and the consumer is the one left holding the bag.
Right. Right.
All right, Amara, we didn't mean to do all of that
I
talk.
I think we went into the rabbit hole.
I think we did. Let's stay on time. So what we're going to do, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and we will do the underreported stories. And then we've got winners and losers coming up here. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. That was this week too.
Yeah. A week ago.
And then Chuck Barris, like a couple days after that.
Yeah.
Gong Show, Chuck Barris.
Yep.
Chuck Berry, man. Chuck Berry was a baller. He cared not. He gave absolutely none of them.
He really did.
At all.
The Chuck Berry photos that have been emerging from like the late 70s, Chuck Berry, very strange.
Yeah, man. He had the perm, had the big leather coat, the bell bottom.
The hair that was kind of like...
Yeah, and there's a picture I saw on Facebook, I think yesterday, where he's like... essentially going big mouth kiss on Janet Jackson as a kid.
Yeah, man. She's a child.
Yeah.
It's like dude.
There's like younger Michael Jackson and younger Janet Jackson and just like strung out Chuck Berry like going for a full mouth kiss.
I want you. Yeah. Maybelline,
anyway,
come here.
All right. Maybe that is the underreported story of the week. 312-981-7200. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. Let's talk underreported. You mentioned earlier, Amara, the Supreme Court hearing.
Yes.
For Neil Gorsuch. I'm not a big fan of guys named Neil. So that's one of my best friends is Neil, but I'm just like, I don't know if I want a judge to be named Neil. That's what I give to this story.
The criteria that we use to vet our Supreme Court. Yeah, right.
Very interesting because, you know, this is a hearing in which Democrats are really kind of on the hot seat. Now, Chuck Schumer has come out and said he's going to filibuster. The Democrats are going to filibuster. But there really is this sort of like they're trying to take the temperature of whether or not their constituents want them to push back on the fact that Merrick Garland was unfairly not confirmed or even there was no hearing.
Yes.
But it's much more than that because Senator Franken went on saying that the Roberts Court and the way that it was with Justice Scalia was one of the most corporate-driven, unfriendly to consumers court in American history.
Yes.
That most of the report or the decisions were for the corporation against the consumer. And there's a lot at stake when it comes to someone who is really comes in the same shape, size, and form of a Justice Scalia.
Yes, yes. And so I will say that as a fan of jurisprudence, and this is going back to my law school days, I mean, I was fascinated by the Neil Gorsuch hearings. I mean, it really was, in my honest opinion, just strictly from a jurisprudence standpoint, it was one of the most thoughtful and one of the most informative and well done hearings of this entire presidency.
Aren't they fascinating?
I mean, it was
Supreme Court hearings are fascinating because they're the big ticket questions and there's a lot going on in there and there's a lot of reference and it's really big-minded people talking big-minded things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I was, you know, I really appreciate, so Neil Gorsuch as a nominee, I mean, he is very thoughtful about how he responded to the questions that were asked. There were a couple of cases that I think spoke to a lot of the apprehension that many on the Democratic side have, especially with regard to a particular case involving a truck driver who ended up, it was a choice between him not driving his truck and it was icy conditions and endangering himself and the rights of the company. And so the way that the decision that Gorsuch had, it seemed that he was playing to or favoring the company over the little person. And Feinstein, she asked several questions about how do you feel about the individual, the little person? Can we trust that you will speak up for the little person, that our jurisprudence will stand up for people? And I think that's a very big concern, especially considering decisions like Citizens United, which in my opinion is one of the worst decisions to come out of
the courts. A decision that said money can stay in politics.
Money in politics, giving corporations the same rights as people. And that is one of the, to me, one of the worst decisions that have come out of the Supreme Court in the last 15 to 20 years. And so there was also this issue of around special education. And we just had Andrew V. Douglas was actually decided on the second day of the Gorsuch hearings, which affords students who need or children who need special needs access that they have to achieve at the same level as their peers who are in general education. Mm. And Gorsuch was actually criticized for a case in which it seemed that he seemed to be on the wrong side of the special education issue.
He is a buttoned up judge. There's no scandal really in his past. A little bit that fluttered up here and there about some things he said in the classroom. But he's an ideologue who is a traditionalist, if you will. I mean, he interprets the Constitution as it was written.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of a tailor-made judge, conservative judge for a Republican presidency, administration, Congress, Senate. What stands in its way?
Nothing. I think they'll filibuster and that'll be great for the optics. But, you know.
Do you think they lose anything to Democrats by going out of their way to try and stop this?
You got to. I mean, that's they're in a weird position, man, because they, for the last 8 years and for at least until July, they really don't have an edge. So filibustering is their only way to be like, look at us, look at us. The problem, though, is Trump gets to pick at least two. Hopefully, not more than that, but at least two Supreme Court justices. And depending on whatever turn this takes in his administration, that could be very detrimental to a lot of Americans.
So two things that I thought were really stood out in these hearings. One is that I thought that the confirmation hearings for Gorsuch really showed that Trump really does not understand the role of the judiciary.
Or anything
I think
else.
That he figured that by nominating this person for the Supreme Court, he believes that the judiciary is supposed to be an extension of the legislative branch or an extension of his political agenda. And if you listen to some of the responses that Gorsuch gave when he was answering some of these questions, he repeatedly stated that, for example, if he was asked to overturn Roe v. Wade, he said he would get up from the table and walk away. He repeatedly stated that his goal is to interpret the law as it is. It is not to make law. It is not to advance any kind of political agenda. And that stands in direct contrast to Trump, who believes that, I'm going to put my guy in.
Well, you just said it. I mean, we said it earlier in this hour, the idea of loyalty and employ, like, that's where he comes from. Mm-hmm. He comes from, I put this person in charge of a project.
Exactly.
They're loyal to me. I pay them.
Exactly. And they'll do it. Right. They'll do what I want.
Right. He doesn't understand the notion of checks and balances that the judiciary is there to interpret.
I would say, I would twist it just to say he does understand and he wants it changed.
I think that far too often we say
he's so detailed. What an ignorant. He doesn't know. But I'm like, he knows. He just wants it changed. Mm. All right. Quickly, let's go to our other underreported story. A very, very mysterious, evil story happening in Washington, D.C., Mario, this was your underreported story. 14 girls?
Yeah, well, there have been 501 cases of missing children so far in 2017, and 22 of those cases in Washington, D.C.
What?
And 22 of those cases are still open. Here's what's happening really quick.
Is it 14 in like a week or
something like
that?
I
just saw the number 14 over and over and over.
Well, there are a lot of people who are upset that the mainstream media is not covering it. That's not totally true. They are. They're just not giving it the oversaturation that they do everything else. And to those people who are like, they're not covering it, I say you post. You post, you post, you post. You talk about it amongst your friends. You keep that conversation alive on social media.
There's a call for the FBI to get involved.
That's Here's the problem, right. though. We're talking about Jeff Sessions as the attorney general, who you don't want me to go into that. But I don't know what kind of play we get with him and that. There is a school of thought afoot that this is all part of a bigger sex trafficking situation in the United States, which is very real. We're talking 10 to 15 year old girls just missing in one place at one time. And like I said, 501 cases of missing children in Washington, D.C., 22 of those cases are still open. That's 22 too many. Yeah. And I would like, if I could use my bully pulpit, just to demand that people read about the story, Google it, find out about it, check it out.
Very strange
story. Do your research and then take that research and post.
Do you think it's a political story in the way that the FBI or any other people who might be involved wouldn't get involved because it's not in their I mean, it feels like it's just this human story that this something is happening in one specific area that is way, way over, you know, where it's happening in other places.
Yeah.
something should be done.
Something definitely should be done. It's actually an underreported story across the board. I mean, Chicago is actually one of the top, if not the top, mm-hmm. city for sex trafficking in the country. Mm-hmm. But we don't really hear about those stories. And so what's happening in D.C. sort of is going under the radar. I think it's going under the radar. I think it's underreported. And I just saw another story about a father and his two sons, who he'd recruited his two sons mm-hmm. to for a sex trafficking
ring. That was here, right?
That was right here in the Chicago area. And so it's just an underreported story overall. I think, unfortunately, because of everything that's happening politically, it tends to overshadow these kinds of stories that whether we're in a political season or not, this is actually happening across the country.
More going on in the world than just what's happening in the Trump administration. Mario right. Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update from Rob on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll do winners and losers and which story whipped you down the rabbit hole and what story we're going to remember in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week.
Man, 500 years.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Amara Enya, Mario Smith.
He really is the Velvet Fog. He was there a second ago and then just poof.
You love Rob Martier. He's got a love interest.
I love Rob Martier. No doubt. That's my man.
We're breaking down this week's news. We're reloading him. This week's news. We are at winners and losers.
I just want to say I love you guys, too.
Yeah! Rob Martier said something to me! Yes! Thank you, Rob.
You got a fan down here, Rob.
I know, man. I'm a big fan, too. There I really go. Am.
The Velvet Fog, baby.
Mutual Admiration Velvet Society Fog. Here.
He is the voice of WGN at night, son. It don't get much realer. We are all off of topic
man,
right now.
You better stop because I'm about ready to come down there and give you a big old bro hug.
You should come down.
I'm gonna.
I bet you will.
Watch
come
yourself.
On, come on down, man.
I love that voice. It's so
smooth. It's the Velvet Fog.
No, I've been enjoying listening to you guys. Good points. It's a lot of fun.
There you go.
Thank all you, right. Rob.
Take care, guys.
Yes! That,
you can put that on your in the back of the next book, guys. Rob Martier lecture. All right.
Scratch that off.
Let's
the
get
list.
To let's get to winners and losers. We'll go around the horn here. Let's start with winners. I mean, I have Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, Illinois comptroller, only because this week more than ever she has stepped up into what was somewhat of a void. For Democrat leaders in Illinois, where because of Speaker Madigan or Senate President Cullerton or even the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Emanuel, there's a certain point where you get burnt out on hearing their voices over and over the same thing. Susana Mendoza, just the new comptroller in this year, has started this almost daily kind of attack on Governor Rauner, how he does his business in his office. The expenditures. She was at the City Club making jokes, you know, about his accomplishments. She seems to be in you know, a thorn in the side of the governor, and it kind of needs – it's a shot in the arm that Democrats downstate needed.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is the point that I was making earlier, that she has a sort of flexibility that is not afforded to other legislators in Springfield. I mean, she is the comptroller. She's responsible for cutting the checks, not necessarily for deciding
policy.
Exactly, the policies around how the budget is allocated. So she has a freedom to be able to critique the governor in a way that other state reps and state senators might not have. The other thing I think that she represents is a departure from to someone to take attention away from Speaker Madigan, for example, who I have to say, even though people might disagree with me, but has been there for 40 years. A lot of the issues that we're facing as a state did not crop up over the last 4 years since Governor Rauner took office.
You're not going to get a lot of disagreements here.
Which is good to know, because I think I have to keep reiterating that, because you would be under the impression that all of our issues just became issues in 2014. No, our tax issues, these have been issues for decades that were not addressed, and we have a speaker who'd been there for 40 years. So now that they have lost a lot of credibility, Speaker Madigan, Mayor Emanuel, now they need someone, a fresh voice, who can be their proxy, essentially, to carry the narrative now that they've lost some legitimacy.
Sounds like somebody's going to run for governor, my friend.
You know, it's interesting.
Yes. Amara Enya for governor. Okay. Here we go. I got you. Okay. Let's do it.
There's a lot of people that are after that job right now. We've seen Chris Kennedy. We've seen J.B. Pritzker. This week, Daniel Biss, the state
Daniel
senator,
Biss.
Comes in.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mayor Paywar.
Mayor Paywar as well. I'm interested because, you know, you ran for mayor and you were up against big money in Mayor Emanuel. And you see here that it's lining up to be a Governor Rauner is going to spend millions. You know, Pritzker and Kennedy are going to spend millions. Do guys like Daniel Biss and Amara Paywar, do they have a chance in a field when there's so much money being thrown around at a state level?
the important thing, the thing that they would have to have, and I don't know because I'm not, it's still early on in the election cycle, but you have to have a message that resonates with people, and you have to galvanize people. You can overcome the money deficit if you have a message that resonates. I think Bernie Sanders represented that. There is a strong anti-establishment sentiment that is running through this country, and it's part of the reason why we have a President Trump right now, mm-hmm. even though President Trump represents sort of the negative side of that. But there's a strong anti-establishment sentiment that is about touching the hearts of people and resonating with them that I think can overcome the money component of electoral politics. And so the other candidates who don't have billions of dollars to spend, they have to speak to the hearts of people. They have to have a message that resonates with the people of the state.
Amara Enya, Mario Smith, let's keep going. Let's go winner. Mario, you had a more down-to-earth home field winner, and that's today's weather.
Let me explain, man. This is all just to kind of go behind.
Weather could run for governor.
Absolutely. Just to go behind the curtain for everybody. We kind of build this in the daytime, in the morning. And this morning it was awesome. It was beautiful outside. Sky was nice and blue and it was sunny and it was warm. Walked around for about 3.5 hours. No jacket on. It was great. At 4 o'clock, it changed completely. It's wet. It's damp. It's cold. You cannot say out of your mouth that you love Chicago and not appreciate what happened today with the weather. So if you are walking around.
You love the peaks and the valleys. Yeah,
man, how can you not? And I, even though I'm complaining about how cold it is right now, this is the greatest city in the world, man. This really is. Chicago is
right,
so dope.
All right, great speech. Let's move on from winners. Let's go to losers. Chicago's a winner. We get it. Chicago's a winner.
What a great
Let's
town.
Go to losers.
I got to go there
sometime. Amara, why don't we start with you, losers.
So the biggest loser or losers that I had this week was related to the 15-year-old freshman that was recorded, gang rape recorded on Facebook. That was a tremendous loss. I think the individuals who recorded and the individuals who watched and the fact
Essentially it was on Facebook Live.
It's on Facebook Live.
And it was a sexual assault that was happening. And in amazing fashion, people watched it and no one reported it.
People watched, no one reported it. And then there were accounts of intimidation for the girl and her family, after that, and what I heard or what I've been told is that it's attempts to intimidate to keep her from speaking out or revealing the identification of those individuals who are involved in the assault. But the biggest loser, I think, is us. I think it's society. I think it's what kind of society, what kind of people have we become that anyone can watch in real time? This isn't a movie, right? And I think there's something that's happened where you can watch that kind of horrific scene taking place and no one said, let me call the police. No one said, let me, what's happening? And then even reporting it to Facebook. And then the individuals who were involved, who were there, it was disturbing. It says something about
society. And it's a trend. I mean, we saw that with the assault on the special needs boy out of the suburbs. Of a couple months ago.
Yep.
But same concept that the people, this is becoming real-time entertainment in the strangest way. And it's something that, you're right, I think is reflective of what we set up with social media and our interaction with it.
Exactly. And you got to be some kind of a nut to go on Facebook Live and commit a rape and not know that at some point those faces will be easily identified.
That's the hardest part, man.
What is wrong with you?
The part of this story that is also a head scratcher, and I think it goes to the same part, Amara, is, okay, so you would automatically think, and I'm not trying to get into a criminal's mind, but you would automatically think actually committing a crime, mm-hmm. you would not want to record that and broadcast that to the world. Yeah. And it seems more and more we're seeing that, whether that be gang shootings or whether we see it to be what we saw with the kid from the suburbs or what we just saw in this case, there's a gloating to it. There is a sadistic quality of like, let me press record.
There's a lot to be said for not being stupid. And if you're dumb enough to do that, then I hope they catch each one of them and prosecute them to every inch of the law that will allow it.
Yeah, but people aren't connecting the consequences. I think I think there's a shift that's taking place where it's seen more as entertainment. Yeah. They're not thinking about, oh, I'm committing a crime. This is an entertainment thing. And the validation or the need for validation via social media, I think, is a lot of what's driving people to record even the most depraved acts because they're still doing it for the attention.
Not to mention, real quick, there are a lot of beefs. A lot of these gang beefs are on social media first, and they start on Instagram and go to Facebook, and then they end up with somebody getting
killed. I think we would save all of the troubles of our world by just getting rid of Facebook.
Okay, man, look, slow down. Okay?
Slow down.
Just keep Facebook out of this. No, you got a point.
I
think everybody should take a break.
I mean, there is something to be said here too. 630 says, you know, I mean, we can talk about the culture part of it, but how about the idea of not raping in the first place?
Yeah, do you know
so
that?
There is something to be said about,
for us to say the criminality of it goes without saying.
Let me bring in Mike because I want to get to one story before we take a quick break here. Mike, this is an underreported story, but it also falls into my loser category. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I thought Colin Kaepernick, I was going to say specifically about the president calling him out by name as this, him not being signed. It was somehow something that he had done personally, but that's just a personality trait of the president. But it's Colin Kaepernick and everything that kind of, not only that he represents, but the stories outside of him, like the fact that he's donated, I think it was like 4 tons of food to Somalia.
And he did Meals on Wheels donation, right?
Meals on Wheels. So, you know, the fact that, hey, you know what? 1 million people might starve from hunger in the next couple of months is kind of an underreported story.
Right.
That in itself is an underreported story. Yeah. And then on a lighter note, that, hey, you know what? The Bears signed their second backup quarterback, Mark Sanchez. Yet, the starting quarterback for San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick, still doesn't have a job, and you wonder why that is.
I
wonder why.
Thanks, Mike.
So I guess it's winners and losers and underreported stories, but it all pretty much orbits around.
Great point. He nails it. And we'll let Mike have that word, and we don't really have to add to that. But it is strange to see that Colin Kaepernick is without a job.
Amazing.
And there are quarterbacks, and I'm nothing against. I'm sure Mark Sanchez is a great quarterback in his form, but the idea that Colin Kaepernick is not getting a job. Because of his political beliefs, which were pretty benign to begin with.
Can you imagine
kneeling for a national anthem? And then it's a little out of whack.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the horror of seeing someone not stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance or not putting his hand on his heart when there's a picture of Donald Trump at one of the debates just standing there while the pledge is going on and everybody else has their hand on their heart? And nobody said a word. And it's the crime in this is, at least from the Bears' standpoint, is that Colin Kaepernick's a better quarterback than Mark Sanchez, and he should have a job, and he doesn't. But Jay Cutler doesn't have a job right now. So what are you going to do?
312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the rabbit hole, although we kind of done the rabbit hole. I feel like we've really gotten deep on a lot of these stories. But I want to get, of course, which story will be remembered from this week. Coming up here, we're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Mario Smith, Amara Enya, we're wrapping up this week's reload.
My man.
All right, so we got rabbit hole story, which you know, we had the Supreme Court hearing, we had the House, the Intelligence Committee hearing. The one that I had for rabbit hole story, I read this whole story on the FCC and internet regulation. There has been caps that have been put on by the Obama administration. This is so fascinating to me. They essentially said to AT&T and Verizon and to T-Mobile and those companies, they said, we're going to consider you to be utility companies because you offer internet service. Instead, so now you're more like an energy company or a gas company. You're an internet company.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, you have to protect the private information of Mario's Google searches or they have to protect, that's private information. You're not allowed to sell that. You're not allowed to use it. You're not able to do anything with it because we feel like there needs to be some privacy for consumers. That was passed through the Obama administration. The rule was, if you need to sell, for whatever reason, Mario's Google search
which I don't think you would want to do that.
Or it's not even Google. It's just but the idea of I shouldn't even say Google. I'm messing up the story. The point being that just what websites you visited while you were connected to the Verizon network.
Right.
You just have to tell the government you're doing that. There's forms and things like that. Well, that is regulation. That's what the Trump administration considers to be regulation. They say that it's slowing down business. It's making them not be able to take risks or find new business interests with your information. So this week, the regulations have been pulled off because there's a monster lobbying unit for the telecommunications industry in Washington. They're rolling it back, and we're going to back to the George W. Bush rules of the FCC when it comes to internet providers. And I find that to be horrific in a way, because you do feel like that's somewhat of a problem. So that's my rabbit hole. Look it up. It's very interesting. And net neutrality as well. A lot going on there. All right, we got 1 minute, so let's just wrap this up. What story will be remembered from this week, from in 5 years and 10 years and 50 years and 500 years from now? Mario's chopping at the bit. Mario, what story?
The 64-day win streak of Trump not being able to do anything administratively. Trump healthcare fail. Epic fail.
You think there'll be cave drawings in 500 years in space? Or like remember showing Paul Ryan with a press conference?
Sad-eyed Paul Ryan looking like he's about to cry because his little healthcare didn't happen.
Until Monday. But yeah, go ahead. Maybe. Yeah, right. Until the weekend they start twisting arms. Right. Mario, what do you got?
Well, I would say that was the biggest story of the week. I think Trump care, the failure of Trump care, I think is something that will be remembered long after this week, so that'd be my pick.
Oh, that's good. There's a couple other stories. I've gone into the science and nature realm, but I will say I know there's a lot of studies.
Really?
There's some interesting studies. 40% of the households in Chicago. This is amazing to me. Millennial populations. 40% of that population are living at home with their parents.
Whoa.
I'm not surprised. I know many.
Right. But I just think that we will remember this time in our life, maybe even that study in this week, because the time just goes, oh, you live with your parents till you're 30.
Yeah.
The life has changed. We've all changed. It's no longer be like, you millennials. It'll just be, that'll be normal, mm-hmm. and that'll be what you do. Can't wait till you're 30. You're out of the house at 30.
Not at my house.
Really, really, really quick. Tomorrow, Promontory, 5311 South Lake Park, hashtag Lunchbag Chicago. It starts at 10 a.m. Come and assemble bag lunches for the homeless. Go out in the streets of Chicago right afterwards at noon and distribute the bag lunches for the homeless. Go down. If you want more information, PromontoryChicago.com.
There you go. Mario Smith, Amara Enyan, thank you so much. Good to see you. We'll see you guys soon.
Peace.
Thank you.